dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Welcome to another episode of Maximum Film. It is episode 225, which is funny because it is 224. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, and I'm going to introduce you to my friends, my jolly old friends. So let me introduce you to them. Oh, it's none other than Alonzo Duralde, the Christmas Zaddy himself, at full maximum power right now. What's good?
Merry Christmas, Ify, and Merry Christmas to all the listeners. Happy holidays, everyone. We've arrived at the apex of another holiday season, and I'm delighted to be here. What's good is that this is a time of year when a lot of people are very generous in giving donations to their local food bank, their local mutual aid organization. What's better is when people sign up for that monthly donation, because, ooh, you know, a lot of people think about helping the less fortunate in December, but the less fortunate would also like to hear from you in March. So if you are inclined and you have the means to do so and you want to help out other people in your community, obviously we're coming off some really shitty years and who even knows what's ahead. But if you want to help the folks who need that help, see if you can do it all year round, because it feels great to give at Christmas, but it also feels great to give when it's not Christmas, but the need is still there.
You love to see it. And I think it's true. Take it as someone who has signed up to quite a few of these monthly services. You forget about it after a while, and it becomes another thing getting ticked out of your account, like all these different streamer sites I'm going to. Like, I'm telling myself, let me remind myself to end the 7-day trial for the Hallmark Channel. And I know I'm going to forget. And I'm just going to have a subscription to the Hallmark Channel.
I got a friend with a Twitch show who I give $4.99 to. Yeah, it's a thing that happens.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah.
Just I know do how it. I'm funded my next movie.
Yeah. You know, and look, at least this thing that you're forgetting about is actually helping someone. So, you know. Shout out. The next up is I'd have to say beautiful, wonderful, stunning, super producer, super programmer, and of course I would get arrested if I didn't mention that she was the queen of the Midwest. It is none other than Drea Clark. What's good?
Arrested. Yeah. There's a constant APB just like in case it happens.
Yeah.
It's right there. Yeah.
We have a Christmas queen.
Yeah. Mine is not nearly as altruistic as Alonzo's, but I will add, if you are actually, this is true if you're listening to this anytime, but if you're listening to this in the holiday season, and instead of bringing you merriment and joy, the holiday season brings you bummer town and coldness and sadness, we love you. It's okay. You're not alone in having a rough spot. So just know you'll get through it. A new month and a new year are just around the corner.
That's right.
And you got this. And my what's good can take you there. Actually, this sounds like a total advertisement because it's actually for a treat. But I don't get any money for this, but you guys, I got super into dessert teas this year. Ooh. Yeah, don't even worry. I like tea and I call it dessert. But Tazo does this dessert tea. The flavor is glazed lemon loaf, and I love it. I love it so much. So if you have warmth already in you, have a dessert tea. If you have cold in you, both metaphorically, figuratively, and literally, have a dessert tea. Treat yourself. Okay, I hear myself. I hear how Southern California that sounds. Oh, it's great. No carbs. That's not my thing. I just like dessert in all forms. But yeah, I'm super into my glazed lemon loaf tea, y'all.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Mm. No, I got pretty into David's tea not too long ago. So I can also attest that, you know, dessert teas are worth getting into, because especially like steeping it when you do the like full on, you need an extra piece of equipment to do it. There's just something to it that makes it like even more.
Oh, I use my Maximum Fun little rocket.
Ooh,
I can't remember the name for what a tea is, but it's like a little rocket ship.
The strainer thing.
The strainer, you shove steeper, the tea leaves steeper. In there. A steeper, you dunk it in the water.
Because if he got all the coffee accoutrements, and now he has to branch out into tea. Next, it's going to be absinthe just for the spoons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, come over. Watch me use this tiny blowtorch to get the sugars burnt right. You know.
Oh, my God.
Got the good stuff.
Iffy, what's good with you other than your tiny blowtorch?
What's good with me is, you know, right about listening this, we're spending, you know, this Christmas with Molly's family. And I think it's going to be a good time for Naomi, because Naomi was the first and still only kid on like my family side. So she got like, you know, that extra attention, but she's five now. So I feel like it's kind of waned. Like they're used to it. They're like, okay, you're good. So now we're going to Molly's family.
She's the old baby.
First, yeah. Yeah. She'll be the fresh new child in this family. And so she's going to get that extra love again. Like we around Thanksgiving, we called and everyone was excited to like talk to her on FaceTime. And he's like, it's like, here's all these people you definitely do not know. You've never met them, but now they're talking to you and you're wondering why. Wave at them just because dad is asking you to. So real excited to see that. And I'm just crossing my fingers that it does snow in New York. Just so she can see that snow. Also, I kept telling her we're going to build a snowman. So...
Girl,
yeah, well, you know, because I grew up in LA and LA it never snows, so I never have to think about it. But I'm like, New York can be snowing, but some people are like, it's not yet. It actually, you know, as media would have me believe, this is when it snows, but the weather.com is like, no, not yet. All right, we shall see, and we shall see what we're talking about today. Today, we're talking about the Hallmark movie Every Time a Bell Rings, and we will get Alonzo's top five Christmas movies of the year. And of course, we'll have staff picks. But first, we have a special guest here. He's a return guest, and he has something to say. Santa Claus, welcome to the show.
Oh. Hey, ho, 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 it's great to be here with my favorite film podcast.
Welcome back.
Thank you, thank you. Iffy, I just want to say that with your daughter making snowmen, even if there's snow on the ground, it still needs to be a certain warmth for the snow to be properly sticky enough to make a snowman. So the likelihood that she's going to make a snowman is very low. So just let her know ahead of time.
Also, maybe. She doesn't know what snow looks like. So substitute whatever material you
want. Sure.
That's true. That's true.
We're all about lying to children here.
That's right, Santa.
Anyways, great to be here. Thank you for having me back on. Now, because of supply chain issues, I am once again forced to take a second job at the Hallmark Network.
Oh.
I'm helping them make movies again, this next year's batch of movies. And as Alonzo can attest to it, the network has grows more powerful each year. Everyone's trying to get in the Christmas movie game, but we're the kings still.
It's true.
So to keep a leg up on the other networks, we put a bunch of directors on retainer. We have that kind of cash.
Oh, smart.
And yeah, very smart. And so that way we get like the best directors for our network and they can't go work for the other networks. And, you know, because we want to keep the leg up. Mm. So we need to come up with projects for these directors that we have on retainer. And I thought you guys could help me come up with some of these ideas.
I would love to.
Absolutely.
Yes,
guys.
Yeah.
It'd be my pleasure.
So we want them to feel comfortable making these types of movies. I know it's a little bit of a departure. It still needs to be a Hallmark movie, but it can be kind of a riff on their old movie. You know, it can use some of the tropes that they're used to using in their own films, you know, but just on the Hallmark Network.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I'll give you a director and the kind of movie of theirs we're trying to make, and you guys have to turn it into a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's it. Does that all make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, are we going to get development credits for this?
Ooh, that's not really my department, Drea, but I will get back to you about later.
Don't call us.
Yes. Okay, so for the first one, You know, one of the directors we have on retainer is, of course, Quentin Tarantino.
Sure.
And but we kind of want to do our own version of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. What do you think that kind of Hallmark Christmas movie could look like?
Well, first off, I'm thrilled he's giving you his 10th and final film.
Yes, it was an honor.
This is a real breaking news moment, truly. Yes. So Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in...
I think here's how we do it. I think that this would be sort of his New York equivalent to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So instead of Los Angeles in the late 60s and the Manson family, this is going to be set in New York City in the early 1970s.
Ooh.
The made-for-TV remake of Miracle on 34th Street, starring David Hartman, who would go on to co-host Good Morning America, with Sebastian Cabot, a.k.a. Mr. French from Family Affair, playing Santa Claus. So that's going to be the setting of the film, but it's also going to be that sort of early 70s New York, the economic depression and, like, inflation and how, like, you know, it was the city had just gotten really kind of grimy, and it's that whole French Connection taking a Pelham 1-2-3. So you've got your grimy New York thing that, you know, Tarantino's seen all those movies and he really wants to, like, recreate that with dead on accuracy. But at the same time, they are making a low budget, made for TV, not nearly as good as the original version of Miracle on 34th Street, and trying to pass that off as quality holiday entertainment. I think there's a lot of possibilities there.
I do. Ooh, I definitely want to know, of course, like, what's my romance angle? Like, do we have, you know, is this a development girl, like, or the script girl? They called all of them girls, like,
yes.
the titles. Yeah. So,
and
you
QT
know, one
still
of those.
Does, I think.
Probably. So, you know, if we're remaking this movie, and you've listed all of Iffy's favorite actors, so I know he's already 100% on board, but we're remaking, or we're watching this, like, so movie within a movie, because that is the sort of fabric of Tarantino,
yeah.
Right? I do think it needs to have I need a small town element. Like, do we have a small town girl who's come and is now working on the set?
Ooh,
and
I like
a fast paced, like, oh, I'm in New York and it's like pre-cleaning, like pre-Giuliani.
A jaded New Yorker who, like, this experience makes her completely convinced that she's got to get the hell out of town and go move to a small town somewhere.
Oh my gosh. I like that. I do. I like, yes, the fast talking cosmopolitan New York lady who the foibles of this shoot,
yes,
are the last thread. But, you know, of course, there's going to be, like, a moment of grace. And who's she falling? Is she falling in love with Santa? Who we got? Who are our leads here?
Well, I mean, obviously you're going to have to get...
I'm not opposed to that storyline, but continue on.
Okay, good.
You got to get new actors to play the old actors, and he'll certainly enjoy, like, casting lookalikes and whatnot. But, you know, Jane Alexander is the female lead in that film, so I could see Margaret Qualley maybe kind of moving over into that role, kind of a continuation, but not, of her work with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Very good. Excellent.
Okay, cool.
Iffy, did you have any ideas you wanted to pitch on that one?
Yeah, I was just trying to see where the feet was going to fit in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Certainly some stockings.
Yeah.
Maybe,
yeah.
You know.
Sure.
Look,
the movie is set at Macy's, so I'm sure there could be, like, some you know, mannequin models, or, like, you know, women wearing the footy hose in the store.
They all have, like, an anklet,
yeah,
of mistletoe.
There,
like,
you go. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm all about that.
Very good. Very good.
Okay,
that's really
good.
Helpful. That's very helpful. Okay. Here's another director that we have on retainer. He's, he's coming off a movie that just came out, and he wants to kind of do something that's going to be less exhausting. You know, he doesn't want the Catholic League, parading outside of his movie premieres anymore. So we have Paul Verhoeven on our retainer, and we're kind of thinking, like, maybe some sort of Showgirls type of Hallmark movie. And so that's what we pitched to him, but we need to kind of fill out the rest of the details.
Yeah, no, I think this is, if we're talking of Paul Verhoeven, I'm going to tap fully in. And I think this is where we get something that's been on my shelf for a long time. We get Robo Santa.
Okay.
Yeah, Robo Santa.
Like,
yeah,
oh,
you know.
Yeah.
They wanted to, you know, and of course this is also going to talk about capitalism. You know, the sure. the big execs in the North Pole wanted a more efficient Santa who doesn't worry about being naughty or nice, because they found that the naughty or nice system is pushing certain kids away, as specifically the racist kids. But Robo Santa was like, no, the naughty or nice system is good. And, you know, his human side starts to take over. That's some element.
Okay.
I'm imagining Santa, like, you know, looking at a kid, and then you see like the little electronic grid inside of his screen, like, naughty.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You see what his screen sees.
Yeah. I love this. Oh, that's really good. Fantastic. Wonderful. Paul will be thrilled. Okay. Moving on, you know, we want to get young men on the network, and so we got David Fincher on retainer, and we want like a Fight Club, that something like the, you know, the young men can be interested in watching in a Christmas movie.
Well, see, I'm thinking that with Fincher, we do a 12 Days of Christmas movie, but it starts on Epiphany, and then it ends on Christmas Eve. And so we begin the movie with the one dry kiss that is normally the end of a Hallmark movie. Mm-hmm. And then work backwards and see how that couple got together. Mind you, the woman is, of course, a super gorgeous and capable. And the guy is kind of a sleazebag. And he is running these kind of like back alley brawls where men go to feel alive during the holiday season.
Sure.
I'd like to actually bring in, instead of the woman being just sort of a traditionally beautiful, even if very tall, what if we made her more of a Marla from Fight Club meets Elizabeth Sanders from Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
So we're looking at a very fierce woman, and, you know, really has her rough edges smoothed out by Christmas. But of course, that means, like, in this backwards progression, when she starts off with her tongueless, chaste peck, she's going to get wilder and wilder the further into the movie, the less and less tamed, which I see. Is a fun trajectory for me to see.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Very good. I like this a lot. Okay, moving on. We got Gina Prince-Bythewood on, you know, coming off of... Oh, what was the movie we talked about that I'm blanking on right now last year? The Old Guard.
The Old Guard, right.
So, you know, we talked about The Old Guard last year, but that was such a big production for Gina. And so she wants to do something more like Love and Basketball, but a Hallmark movie. So maybe something like that. What do you guys think?
A Hallmark Christmas movie. Okay, so I feel like, for sure, you know how people come back to their hometowns over the holidays and it's like, ugh, what are we going to do? It makes sense to me that there would be this impromptu. I'm happy keeping the basketball theme. Like, if it ain't broke. And so, like, it's this pick up round robin tournament of sorts that turns very heated, but also love ensues. Who are our characters, though?
I think, you know, old friends get together and they just think, oh, we're just going to shoot some hoops. It'll be great.
Yeah.
But there's that whole resentment of like, I stayed in the small town, but you left and went to the big city. Mm. And so then it really becomes this whole sort of like, town versus, city people thing. But then it turns out that the sister of one of the guys who stayed in the town falls in love with one of his old friends who she never really knew when he lived there. But now he's come back from the big city and she's dazzled by his worldliness.
And Santa, we do have a contractual requirement here.
Yes.
We're going to need someone to say the line, I'm going to play you for your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. We were planning on that.
Okay, good, good. That's a pretty, that's a non-negotiable for us.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, very good. Wonderful. Iffy, did you have any other thoughts for a Love and Basketball Hallmark movie?
Just that we keep the Maxwell Women's Work song in it. The song.
We have that. Don't worry. We have the budget for that.
I knew existed before the Kate Bush version.
Yeah, yeah.
And did. Still yes. prefer to the Kate Bush version, which I feel sure. like is oddly sexist, unfortunately. Mm. So I don't tell many people. I feel like, you know, the women's work sung by a man. I'm
Kid,
like, oh,
you've
I like
absolutely
one.
Said that on this podcast before.
And it's still problematic.
Well, that's yes. it's growth, you know? He's, it's
and
growth.
That's still him keeping it quiet.
Yes.
It's okay, growth.
Here's the last one here, and sure. this is a sister duo, and we can't believe that they're working together again. Lana Wachowski and Lily Wachowski we have them both on retainer, and they want to do something. I know, very deep. Christmas.
I mean, they
it's
got
a big
Santa.
Industry.
You know what? Do I know? Yeah.
Yeah. This is just like a part-time job. You know. So we want to do something like Cloud Atlas on the Hallmark Network here. What's your Cloud Atlas Hallmark movie look like?
Okay, so weirdly, one of the better films, two really of the better films of the Hallmark this year were these films called Sister Swap, and it starred the real-life Williams sisters, not the tennis-playing ones, the acting ones, Kimberly Williams-Paisley and Ashley Williams, and the films kind of interlock in like, if you know the play The Norman Conquest, where somebody will come running into one movie, spouting about plot things that are happening in the whole other movie, and I really hope they do a really cool DVD with that. So I see the Wachowskis making two separate stories that somehow bleed into each other.
Yeah.
Same cast, different characters.
Okay, I like that.
Different, and just to be clear, we do not want the actors playing different races.
Yeah, no, we're not doing that this time.
We're good with that. No. I do like the idea of traveling through time and space and experiencing mm-hmm. this sort of crossover.
Ooh, yes,
like,
exactly.
You know, that's one of those interesting things of Cloud Atlas is how far along the timeline.
Sure, so it's
like
Christmas on Earth 1962, and then Christmas on Betelgeuse in, you know, 4,219.
A solid year. A solid year. Yes. No, I like that. I like that back and forth. I mean, and, you know, if you're going to have two Wachowskis, make two movies. Like,
for sure. Yeah. But they will interlock somehow.
No, the interlocking is very exciting. What cast members do you think could be in both playing drastically different roles?
Definitely my boy, you know, he's not getting enough work, and we got to make sure he's getting, you know, this little indie up and comer actor trying his best, you know, doing what he can, just stepping
also,
away.
And of course, your boy being Timothée Chalamet.
Of course. I mean, who else?
Already looks like a Christmas elf. So made yes. in heaven.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
he's played, you know, he played Paul Atreides in Dune,
yep,
right. And he also played, he was in Little Women as Lori.
Mm-hmm.
So he's played kind of cross-generational, you know, futuristic and past
true.
Roles.
In we
the
know
past.
He
and he's been in a Christmas movie. He was in Love the Coopers in a role that no one remembers, probably including him.
Probably him, yes. Okay, good.
Love
so we
the
have
Coopers.
We have two movies, two expansive scenarios, two incredible directors, and a single cast member. And I think this is going to be a hit.
We couldn't agree more at the Hallmark Network. Thank you so much for your guys' help. And guess what? Have a Merry Christmas.
Oh, you too, Santa.
Santa, that
all
means
right.
so much coming from you.
Yeah, uh-huh. All right. Everyone have a good one. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
He just kind of rolled out. Just slid in, rolled out, didn't give any gifts.
He did go up a chimney. We can attest to that.
He knows how to enter and he knows how to exit.
All right, y'all. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about Every Time a Bell Rings.
Hey, we've got a new sponsor. It's DoorDash. And, you know, if you're having one of those days where you've got back-to-back meetings, I don't know, maybe back-to-back podcast recording sessions, you've got errands to run, chores to deal with, dinner's not going to make itself. So what's your secret? A little help from DoorDash. You can get dinner. They'll deliver household essentials, everything on your grocery list at your door.
For sure. I am someone who, as much as the world has changed in the last couple of years, something I've appreciated has been there is a slight slowing down and a slight in keeping yourself sort of safe and snug and isolated. Having people bring you things is such a treat. I will never, ever not like think that's the fanciest thing ever. And so I love that even if I'm like Alonzo said, back-to-back podcast, or I'm working really late, I can get either a delicious actual meal rather than me scrounging a bunch of terrible things in my kitchen, or have I had them bring me cat food because I have not made it anywhere and I have to take care of these living things? I have, because if where I am, they'll go to places like that, which I love. And I'm also a big fan of that everything is left outside my door now. And I hope that never changes. And I don't know why we had it any other way. I love not having to make small talk with strangers who are bringing me things. Instead, I can pretend I'm not a spoiled princess and they can leave it without ever seeing my spoiled princess face.
Ooh, well, if that sounded good to you, I have even more good news. For a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code MAXFILM. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code MAXFILM. Don't forget, that's code MAXFILM for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply.
This week on Maximum Fun's pro wrestling podcast, Tights and Fights, Austin Creed, best known as WWE's Xavier Woods, tells us why his fans find him so easy to love.
So I think it's less me being good at it and more people wanting to be a part of something. And it's very easy to be a part of these things because I constantly am screaming about what I'm interested in.
Austin Creed on the perfect wrestling podcast, Tights and Fights. Find it on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway, in the studio with me,
Drea Clark,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Every Time a Bell Rings. Alonzo, who else but you to give us a brief synopsis of this piece of cinema?
So we have three adopted sisters, Charlotte, Emily, and Nora. They have not been super close in recent years. They're all coming back home for Christmas in Natchez, Mississippi, where they grew up. Their father has passed away. Their mother still runs the family wood shop. And they're all sort of at a crossroads in their life. Charlotte has been running around the world building, you know, hospitals and other essential structures for the underprivileged. Emily is a hardcore business lady in the classic Hallmark sense. Her hunky husband is a baker, and they're talking about maybe starting a family, although he's talking about it a lot more than she is. And then there's Nora, who has recently had a business disaster with her board game cafe in Boston. And so now she's back home in Mississippi, sort of licking her wounds, putting the wood shop on the internet and looking for lesbian love. And over the course of the holidays, the three sisters will get closer. They will unlock some secrets of the past, and they will go on one last scavenger hunt that their father planned for them every time a bell rings.
Nice.
Wow.
The father who passed away. Amazing. The year and a half before this. Can I just jump in and say, I think I previously mentioned this. I didn't realize how much adoption and adopted family had to do with this one. And I was so excited by that. Like, it starts like many of these do. You see like child actresses playing the young. Mm. And my first thought was, ooh, I don't know about the casting. These kids don't even look related. And then you see the grown up ones and you're like, oh, and it's such a folded in part. It's an essential part of this narrative for a few different reasons. And like I said, my parents had my sister in college, and then she was adopted and raised by another family and like totally closed adoption back in those days. And she has, one of the people get to say, like, my sister's sister. My sister has a sister and two brothers. And so her being in a family full of adopted kids was just an interesting insight that I didn't know. I was like, oh, I'm like expecting Alonzo to have all the expertise, but I had this strange family connection to watching adoption, and especially watching like one of the characters ends up looking for her biological mother and mm-hmm. connecting with her and what that looks like. And it was interesting. It was one of the ways that I was kind of crediting, like, oh, these movies have really upped their game. Like, the writing was better than, it's been a minute since I've watched one, and it was better than I remembered and better in general. But then it also had things that just on a basic level, I'm like, why are these sisters fighting? Like, there was just this yeah. fundamental. I was like, I don't understand why these, there's like an estranged quality to their relationship
yeah.
that you have to believe for them to mend. Like, the whole thing is this heartwarming mending that I was always like, I don't really understand how they're fighting.
Yeah, they're like, it's always like, the girls be fighting. Like, that was kind of this undertone where it's like, uh-oh.
Like Charlotte and Nora are mad at Emily because she eloped, and so they didn't get to go to her wedding. I'm like, that's
like
how
a sister would never, like,
as a character who says, that's how eloping works.
Yes. Yeah. And they do, yeah. It's also interesting because and we can definitely talk about this more. I wasn't familiar with these actresses. I was pitched and sold on this by that there was going to be a lesbian romance. And then the whole time I was like, which one's going to, is it all three of them? They all three work for me. Are they all going to go home and like meet like, oh, we're going to meet up with our old cheerleading squad. Like, anyway, yeah, yeah. So like I was happy to go on board the lesbian train in so many different directions, including the girl who ended up like, there's the, of course, I don't know, this might shock you. There is a very hunky dude in this small town.
What?
Who's been holding a torch. The idea that a man employed that looks like that is not already been married twice in that small town in Mississippi is absurd.
He just can't seem to find somebody.
That guy for sure is like, oh, I keep getting older, but they stay the same.
Well, and he's like in a rock band. So you just know he's slept with every woman in the Tri-County area.
Woman and their mother. Like, and then he's like, oh, no, I've just been pining over this like building contractor in Peru. I feel I've really deranged. I just wanted to jump on the adoption trip right away because that was a really unexpected narrative angle.
It is. And I think that it also with, I mean, you know, the lesbian part definitely, but I think also the adoption angle and how it's handled and the fact that you have like one of them is not a white woman, you know, all of that feels very new Hallmark to me. Like the reflecting of the changes in the last couple of years. And I got to know Alice Murray, who's one of the main writers on this a couple of years ago. I moderated a panel that she was on of writers at Christmas Con at the first year they did it. And she's very cool and very funny and smart. She's a great Twitter follow. And she's always sort of looking to kind of expand the boundaries. She's been writing for Lifetime and some other places. And she's always sort of like kind of testing, what will they let me do? What can I put in that is reflective of life as I observe it, but that you don't necessarily see in movies like this?
Yeah. I did sound like I was dogging on the idea of the sisterly battle, but this is, it's a necessary contrivance. Like, of course, it's one of those things when you watch movies in many genres where you're like, okay, so I get it. We're on a ride. These people have to feel this certain way. You're either in or you're out. I'll be in. So that wasn't a total
like the bell itself. You have to break it to fix it.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, no, this was, it was so fun because, you know, I got to watch it. You know, I've seen a Hallmark Christmas movie before, thanks to this pod specifically. So I knew what I was getting. I know the formula, but it was funny having Molly there with me. And I was like, no, you got to understand. This is how this works. Stop it. This is, it's the reason for the season. I'm not going to let you disrespect it. You're going to have to go into another room if you talk too much.
There is a certain level, like these films are so beloved by so many people. And there is just a general like washing away of Listen, if you're going to nitpick over the believability of whatever, like I'm saying, like the contrivance level in these is always, you know, sky high.
Credit where it's due. A thing that this movie does really well that I've seen bobbled very badly in a lot of Hallmark movies, whenever there is a the scavenger hunt comes up periodically as a plot device. There was even a movie a few years ago called Christmas Scavenger Hunt. And usually when they do these, it's so obvious. Like the clues, like you're 10 miles ahead of the character going, what? The ice and snow? Oh, it's where Santa is. Like it's just, they're so dumb. And this one, the clues could be multiple things. And in fact, turn out to be, they have to do actual legwork and figure out, oh, we thought it was this, but it actually means this. Like they're all really clever. And I don't know if that's a thing of Hallmark used to be like where people would write harder clues and they say, no, the audience needs to know what's going on. So dumb it down. Or just that Alice is really good at coming up with these fake scavenger hunts. But I loved the fact that I wasn't ahead of the characters in knowing where the next clue was going to be.
Now, was this filmed in Natchez, Mississippi? Because they make such a point of showing you, like, you literally, they go on a riverboat. And I can't imagine, I assume all of these films are shot in Canada. And I was like, I don't, are they even allowed?
Me,
is
that
illegal to have riverboats in Canada?
Every so often, they'll do at least, like, partial exteriors in a certain place and then do the rest of it. And so I don't know if they shot 100% of it in Natchez, but I do know they shot a lot of it there. And you do get a lot of the local flavor that is specifically local flavor and not just hide all the Canadian flags.
I was gonna say, you know what's so funny is like, yeah, I'm so used to like a lot of these Christmas movies being like in the East Coast or Midwest that I didn't know was Natchez at first. So like when they had jambalaya for dinner, I was like, what the fuck? And you just have jambalaya.
I feel like I've seen a bunch of southern ones.
Yeah.
Maybe whatever algorithm like you get stumbled on. Like,
well, here's the thing. Part of the Hallmark rather, as opposed to Lifetime, part of the Hallmark Christmas formula is they have always insisted on snow. Like this movie might be set in Memphis in December. It might be set in South Carolina in December. It's going to be snowing anyway. We don't care. Weather is, means nothing to us. So the fact that this movie is not blanketed in snow makes it an outlier for Hallmark movies. That's why if you're going to see a movie with a title like Christmas in Mississippi or Christmas on the Bayou, it's probably going to be on Lifetime because they'll make movies in the South. They'll make movies in the Southwest. Friend of the show, Cristela Alonso, wrote one this year called like Holiday in Santa Fe, I think.
Nice.
But you, normally speaking with Hallmark, it's got to be like, you know, icy cold with plenty of snow. And they didn't go that route here. So that's even yet another way that I hadn't thought about until we mentioned it, that this movie is sort of breaking with the past.
Okay, so one of the best tropes in Hallmark Christmas movies or Hallmark, their romances in general, is the stunt casting. And now it's typically of a parent. I did not expect Dee Wallace, the mother from E.T., to be the mother of these three girls. And she's so genial. It's so lovely. And again, I'm hearkening back to the adoption thing, but it was also so very real to me of just like casually talking to these girls about like, oh, the year that you were adopted. And this is the photo of when we brought you home. And she's so like, pleasant sounds benign, but she's like radiates pleasantness.
She exudes goodness.
I was so happy to see her, and it was such a it took me a second. I was like, I know her, and I weirdly know she's a good mom. How do I E.T.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And they give her this moment that they fully understand the ramifications of, but this moment where she gives the middle daughter, who's ambivalent about motherhood, you know, this beautiful hand-carved crib, and the daughter's like, great, thanks. And so then later the mom's like, I owe you an apology. I really didn't mean to pressure
Alonzo?
You. And I was so happy the movie closed that loop because I just thought, oh no, Dee Wallace, do not give her a crib. What are
and
you
not
doing?
Only did they close it, thank you so much for bringing it up. That actually was my favorite storyline. The middle daughter with the hunky ass baker husband, send my way and make me pancakes. Thank you. But yeah, like Alonzo said, he's all excited, and she's this entrepreneur. She has a startup, and there's this moment, the mom gives him the crib, and I was like, ugh, tone deaf. And I was thinking of people like me or other child-free people who have decided not to have children and just like, they're just going to push through this and be like, and they make a moment of it. The mom handles it with grace and is like, that might have been forceful. You do whatever you want. And then this couple has this beautiful, because mostly until then I was just talking to the screen. I'm like, have the conversation about children before marriage, people. But then this couple, like their whole arc resolves in this really loving and unexpected way. I was so pleased.
Yeah, I think it's very typical for these movies. If they were even going to float the notion of a character who is ambivalent about motherhood, by the end of it, she's going to come around, yes, and be like, no, of course. She's going to see a kid. Like, you, yeah, know, all of her biological clocks are going to go off. And this movie ends with her still getting to be ambivalent. And that's a huge leap forward.
Yeah. And that it's not a critique. And her husband is on board and is like, all right, we're a team. You know what I want. We'll see where it goes. Anyway, I thought they handled that so, so well.
Yeah.
Can we get into the super cute lesbian?
No,
she, of course, her love interest is new to town. And they have a nice, like, ooh, they sort of run. They have a meet cute. Mm-hmm. And then they run in and they do all this. And I was the whole time, because my, like, real life eyes were on, I was like, she not going to, like, casually ask if she has a girlfriend or something? Like, how is she doing, like, a queer handshake with this woman? Because they're on these sort of, like, pleasant things. I'm like, is this? Maybe? And they're like, no, we don't need to. We're just, we know. We both, yeah, feel the vibe. It's cool.
Nobody has to say, so, Tegan or Sarah? You know, like.
Right. Like, there's no, how do I find out if this? Yeah.
It's all in the looks. Yeah.
It was. Oh,
yeah. And, you know, admittedly, this is a B story. You know, ultimately, mm-hmm, they're really far more interested in, as you say, Peru architect and hunky local than any of the other plot lines. But it's in there and it's included. And I'll tell you, for us, that storyline and that kiss may feel real tame and retro, but boy howdy did people flip the fuck out. Like the hardcore old Hallmark audience that keeps claiming they're never going to watch Hallmark again but still do, like, had their usual social media meltdown, went after actress Allie Liebert, who plays the lesbian daughter, who is a lesbian in real life, and she was like, look, y'all can spew that shit at me all day, I don't care, but I worry about your children. You know, yeah, and I hope they feel loved. I hope they feel
and your
safe.
Your grandchildren.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know.
I agree with you. It's actually, it was reminiscent of, and I don't remember the title, Alonzo, the Christmas story we covered last year.
The Christmas where, again, house.
The Christmas house, where the gay storyline was the B storyline. But similarly, within Every Time a Bell Rings, the matter of factness and the acceptance is another thing. When you have Dee Wallace talking through, like, oh, that's the day we brought you home or whatever, she also is just very casually like, oh, she broke up with her girlfriend and it's been hard. You know, it's just family stuff and life stuff, and it's not a story. It's not a coming out. It's not a, oh,
yeah, it's just a part of her art that, like, you know, and it's her getting over kind of failing this tabletop game shop and coming to terms with, like, trying to, I'm sorry, what did she look at when they had the meet cute? She said she was working on a website. She looked at a piece of paper and was like, this website's good. And I'm like,
oh my God, 100%.
What are you looking at?
It's a flow chart.
Really good. It was truly like a paper 2D drawing of what her website would be. And she's like, wow, you're really good.
Yeah, I was like, I get it. Like, because it would be so uninteresting for her to just stare at a laptop. But I'm like,
she could have looked at a laptop just as long. That was very funny.
Yeah, no, if there's ever a consistency here, Hallmark never gets tech right.
Can I tell you my favorite moment? And it's one I feel almost positive none of you bumped on. And I paused it because it made me laugh, which is the three sisters finally have a moment, like, of reckoning, and they're sitting in the living room. and they are sitting on the two most uncomfortable couches I have ever seen in my life. I was like, I honestly was trying to think of the reasons that the art department would have put those couches in the scene, because it's these, they're couches facing each other, and they're literally like those old lady, like wood couches with like a very thin, like crocheted padding on them and like super ornate backs. I was like, why does Dee Wallace doesn't have these couches? She's got like super cozy, like four people could sleep on a single of her like huge wraparound like couch. What are these doily made couches? This is the kind of stuff that invades my brain. I laughed so hard though. I was like, I need to know. I want to track down their production designer and be like, talk me through this. Was it the dimensions of the room? Could you not get couches through the door? What is the deal?
Who hates these actresses and wants to make them suffer?
They made them sit on those couches all day. Was this payback? Was this a dare to be like, you know what? I bet someone wouldn't even have one of these couches. Do you think someone would have two of these couches? These are the kinds of things I think of when watching movies.
It's like someone's nephew's like special designer couch that they're like, hey, you know, I'll let you use them in your movie for free.
Their nephew from 1932.
Yeah.
Yeah. These were couches from like right after the Great Depression.
Yeah. I do have to say, the fact that the Asian daughter has a black husband, this reminded me very much of this year. There was a one of the spoof movies that came out about these films, A Clusterfunk Christmas. So the woman goes to the small town, and there's a couple that runs an antique store called Colorful Representations.
Shut up.
It's an Asian woman and a black man, and they keep saying things like, well, we check all the boxes, like, because we ship fragile items, you know. So it just, that just kind of struck me as the, like, okay, I see what we're doing here. We're putting all of our POC in one basket, but fine, movie. Sure. I believe them as a couple, and so, you know,
I did want you to know, so the hunky baker African-American husband who keeps getting left with the mother. I was like, can you imagine going to Mississippi with your wife and then having her be like, oh, I'm just going to pop out with my sisters for like 50 hours. Do you just want to hang with my mom?
Teach her how to make sourdough bread. Bye.
Can you just keep teaching? I was like, Dee Wallace better flirt with him. Like, yeah. I would have been fine with an inappropriate side thing where they like had a real quick Christmas affair.
Or she better like pull the whiskey out from under the counter as soon as the girls leave. Like, oh, they're gone.
Also, like, he was offering to Liam, the rock star hunk from the hometown, was like, hey, call me up if you ever want to hang. He never cashed in on that.
That is so true.
True.
He makes such a point. He's like, no, call me. And they never hang out once.
I'm good. You look weird.
That was like their only scene together. And they were like, we're going to do a reverse Bechdel. The two of us have to exchange dialogue with each other that has nothing to do with the women. Call me.
Yeah,
okay,
please.
We did it. Yeah.
Thank you.
That's so true. Alonzo, has the hunky lead been in other hunky?
Yes. His name is Wes Brown. He's a fixture on the channel.
I felt that.
And he's the
often plays roles that involve him playing singing? An instrument and or singing.
Yes.
He had to co-star twice with Kelly Pickler. Bless his heart.
Sure.
But yeah, he's a pretty reliable Hallmark hunk, I would say.
He looked so much like Ken Marino, like a sanded down, like if Ken Marino had like his teeth whitened, like that kind of energy.
If Ken Marino was playing a soap actor on a show.
Yes, yes. And I didn't hate that. Yeah. I also loved that he was like, okay, listen, my entire role here, I'm supportive guy. I'm fine with that. I'm like the happy-go-lucky supportive guy. Just call me if you need a ride or a duet.
I have made the joke that Hallmark and straight pornography is where the women are unquestionably the stars and the men understand what their role is, but that they're never going to be number one on the call sheet.
Exactly. And and you know what? Like, that's an ethos I can get behind.
No, look,
that feels good to
there,
me.
I know women who watch these movies, not because they necessarily love the aesthetic, but they love the fact that these are always movies about women with jobs, and it's about their lives and their desires, and they're the ones driving the action all the time.
Yeah. And even the women without them, like with families, like everyone's just respected for the path they've taken.
Exactly.
At least in the ones that I've seen. Obviously, you know, there's a whole thread of garbage points, but we don't watch or support those. So,
no.
Yeah.
You know, and if they want to get murdered, that's happening over on Lifetime.
That's right. Peril, take it over there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's jump into it and get to these final reviews. So, you know, for the final review, Drea, why don't you start?
Well, this is true. I mean, it would be a stream it for me. I enjoyed this. I really liked watching it. I really want more people to find the deep, soulful happiness I found in watching those two couches face off. But yeah, I think this is a fun little Christmas movie. And when you want to watch a movie like this, this is a great option. Like, if this is like, oh, I know exactly the flavor I want. This was a very fun and sweet, and much like Colorful Representation, it ticked all the boxes.
Yeah. No, I'm going to let the Christmas Daddy go last on this one.
Oh, nice.
It up. Yeah. It was a stream it for me as well. Same thing. It was fun. I had a blast. And when you watch movies like this, you do get it. You understand. You're like, oh yeah, this is getting me in the Christmas mood, the Christmas spirit. It's cute. And like, say what you will, but like, you know, you're invested. I was locked in. And it was funny because I did come in with that, like, you know, that first kind of like irony, and I was like watching it, and I was like, oh, you know, this is a Alonzo thing. And then like, I think it was like the music scene. I was like, Molly called me out because like I was tapping her to the beat of the song, and she's like, oh, it seems like you're locked in on the song. And I was like, all right, yes, the movie has won me over. Leave me alone.
Well, it's funny. Dave was like, make sure people know that this was Casey's idea, that y'all do a Hallmark movie. I admittedly grade these films on a separate scale than I would normally have in this show when I'm reviewing movies for the Wrap. Christmas made-for-TV movies are a thing unto themselves, and I think they deserve to be weighed separately. But I would say in the world of made-for-TV Christmas movies, which I have a world I spend a lot of time in every year, this would be a screen it for me, just because I think that compared to most of the ones out there, it is trying to do different things, and it is moving Hallmark, you know, into the late 20th century in a lot of ways, in terms of representation and in terms of just like complicated character dynamics and sort of dramatic choices. And so, you know, yes, there's obviously things you can point to and be like, well, that's corny, or that would never happen, or why don't they have this conversation? But I think that, you know, the performances are really strong. Dee Wallace is great in this. I like all three actresses, you know, playing the sisters. And, you know, yeah, you do get invested in their separate plot lines, and you do kind of buy them as, you know, this family that has, you know, been really close and then kind of maybe fallen apart a bit and is now getting close again. And they're all jointly mourning their late father. And so, yeah, for me, on the separate Christmas movie scale, absolutely a screen it.
Ooh. May I add a small PS, a postscript to mine?
Yeah.
The other thing I want to credit this for is all three of them left this movie with their ambitions intact.
Yes.
Which I've liked a lot, because there are the whole tropes of, oh, I've, you know, go to your small town and leave your like busy work career life. And these were all people who were like, nope, I still have my ambitions and dreams. Okay, sorry, I went after Alonzo. Oh,
it's perfectly fine.
That's all good.
That's very Christmassy of you, Alonzo.
That's right. Thank here to share.
And we're here to go on a quick break. But when we come back, we'll be talking some more fun stuff.
Hey, Keith.
Hey, Helen. Hey, you've got another true-false quiz for me?
Yep. Our trivia podcast, Go Fact Yourself, used to be in front of a live audience.
True. Turns out that's not so safe anymore.
Correct. Next. Unfortunately, this means we can no longer record the show.
False. The show still comes out every first and third Friday of the month.
Correct. finally, we still have great celebrity guests answering trivia about things they love on every episode of Go Fact Yourself.
Definitely true.
And for bonus points, name some of them.
Recently, we've had Ophira Eisenberg, plus tons of surprise experts like Yardley Smith and Suzanne Summers.
Perfect score.
Woo-hoo.
You can hear Go Fact Yourself every first and third Friday of the month with all the great guests and trivia that we've always had. And if you don't listen, well, then you can go fact yourself.
That's the name of our podcast.
Correct.
Woo!
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ivy Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Drea Clark.
And after countless minutes of Christmas movie madness, it's now time for Alonzo to name his five favorite Christmas movies of 2021. This is coming out December 24th, so there's still time to watch all five of these films before Christmas. Alonzo, take it away.
Okay, so let's talk about my top five Christmas films for 2021. Honorable mention first to Crashing Through the Snow, which is a Hallmark movie that I liked quite a bit this year. It was sophisticated and about mixed families. It's actually kind of sexy in a way, but it premiered in Christmas in July, so... we won't count that with all of the other Christmas season titles. Also, Spencer, which is a great movie that happens to be set over Christmas. But, I mean, come on. We're not going to put that in contention with, like, you know, Netflix and Lifetime. So, everybody calm down. All right. So, these are my top five Christmas films for 2021. Coming in at number five would be... Under the Christmas Tree, which was Lifetime's first lesbian-centered Christmas film. They did it right. It was the characters were interesting and unique. They didn't have the usual, you know, the long curl, as my husband Dave likes to call them. The look. One of them actually had kind of a Betty Page bangs thing going on, but also some you know, clever Christmas stuff and a nice relationship. And they did it nicely. So kudos to you for that, Lifetime. Number four is Hallmark's An Unexpected Christmas, which is a romantic comedy starring Tyler Hines and Bethany Joy Lenz. I am a fan of the fake boyfriend-girlfriend plot, but this one was actually a pair of exes having to pretend to still be together while coincidentally being in the same town where his family lives over Christmas. The farcical elements were fun, and the characters actually were given, you know, the tiniest bit of depth, and the two leads were very charming, so it all worked. Coming in at third... Netflix's Princess Switch 3 with Vanessa Hudgens and Vanessa Hudgens. As William Bibbiani and other people pointed out, they do the caper heist stuff way better than Red Notice did. And this is just a really charming franchise. I always have fun with these. Number two, also on Netflix, was Love Hard, which we talked about on the show, with Nina Dobrev and Jimmy O. Yang. A Christmas movie for grown-ups, the occasional sort of naughty-ish thing, but the couple had a lot of chemistry. There were a lot of really solid laughs. I really enjoyed Harry Shum Jr. as the worst, most competitive older brother ever. And then, of course, topping the list is, what else? Single All the Way. For all the reasons that we discuss in this very episode, it's the kind of Christmas movie, queer or otherwise, that I would love to get every year from now on.
Well, there you have it. It was the list and it was listing. So, you know, now I feel like as soon as you're done here, you have to start watching them if you want to get them in before Christmas. But I feel like you can watch some Christmas Day. You know,
look, you know, Epiphany is January 6th. So, yeah, you've got December 25th is the first day of Christmas. It's not the 12th. It's the first day of Christmas. So you've got plenty of time.
All right. Well, you heard it from the Christmas Daddy himself. So if you need some more further research for your Christmasing and now that you know
this is just the mm-hmm. first day. Yeah.
I think Alonzo might have a book for you. Might have some literature
I might. Yes, please. You know what? I hope you were able to give it as a gift this year. But even if you weren't, I think you'll get a real kick out of I'll Be Home for Christmas movies. And, you know, if Hallmark can air Christmas movies throughout the year, then you can enjoy this book throughout the year. It's a book I wrote with the Deck the Hallmark podcast hosts. We talk about more than 100 Hallmark Christmas movies. Well, mainly they talk about it. I pop up here and there, but, you know. It's got a lot of fun recipes, and you can certainly make those whenever you feel like it, because for me, dark chocolate and peppermint never goes out of style, and lots of other fun stuff. It's a really delightful book. I'm super proud to have been involved with it, and pick it up and enjoy it whenever, or just have it ready to go next year when the holiday starts. When that countdown to Christmas begins on Hallmark Channel, you will be locked and loaded and ready to go.
Nice. All right, well, now it's time for staff picks. It can be any movie at all, so Drea, why don't you start?
All right. So in the spirit of Christmas and in the spirit of Alonzo's knowledge of Christmas movies, my film is a movie that he talked about in a previous movie minute, Christmas movie minute, and it's Love Hard with Jimmy O. Yang and Nina Dobrev on Netflix. I liked his little very quickly said wrap up of it, and I enjoyed it so much. I texted him right after to say thanks for the recommendation, but it's great. It's the whole conceit of it is that Nina Dobrev has fallen for this Tinder match across the country and thinks he's this hot biracial Asian dude and flies herself there to surprise him for Christmas. And instead it is Jimmy O. Yang, who lives in his parents' basement, and it is so endearing and so well made, so genuinely romantic. I was smitten kitten for Jimmy O. Yang, and having seen him in Crazy Rich Asians, I did not expect that to be coming from me, and it was. So kudos to you and your acting skills and your adorable face. Yeah, it was great. Love Hard.
Ooh, all right. Like Die Hard with love.
Yeah, Die Hard, but with love. Exactly. Oh, and Harry Chum Jr. plays his brother in the most vainglorious, amazing way. Solid comic relief.
Absolutely. Okay, my pick I might have done before, but you know what? I've been doing this show for years, and so at some point, we're going to get some repeats in. And it is, because we're talking about the first day of Christmas and the Feast of the Epiphany that's coming up in early January, John Huston's final film, The Dead, based on the short story by James Joyce, is about a gathering of people in the early 1900s on Epiphany, having dinner, playing music, maybe having a little too much to drink. And Angelica Huston plays a woman who goes with her husband, and she seems to be very wise and serene. And yet she hears an old song that rips her apart and brings back an old memory of the past and opens the floodgates of memory and makes her talk about a lost love that her husband realizes he'll never be able to compete with. This is a tiny, intimate film, but so beautiful and so brilliantly acted all the way through. The entire ensemble is just wonderful. Very often when we talk about the great filmmakers, their last movies are often not their best work, kind of disappointing, a bit of a going out with a whimper and not a bang. But damn, John Huston nailed it in his final film. It is one of the only films about the 12th day of Christmas, and it's one of my very favorites. And you can currently watch it on my two favorite streaming sites, Tubi and Canopy.
Yes! Oh, get your bingo cards made and just put those on there.
All right. And, you know, for me, I'm going to do a new one. You know, lots of times you may hear that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. Or, you know, if you're talking to me, you'll hear that Eyes Wide Shut is a Christmas movie. But a new Christmas movie that I'm adding to the ranks that is, offbeat Christmas movie is The Green Knight. We talked about it here, and I want to make that your new. And as a matter of fact, they're actually, I don't know if it's passed by now, but they're doing a one night only playing of The Green Knight in theaters for the holiday season, because it is indeed a Christmas movie. So that is my staff pick. Ho, ho, ho.
I don't endorse the movie, but I do endorse it being a Christmas movie.
Well, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show and/or that endorsement, tweet at us at maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm. Or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien, who's, decking the halls. And our senior producer, Kevin.
He's the Lori to our Little Women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And our senior producer, Kevin Ferguson, who is supplying Casey with the bows of holly. This is a production of Maximum Fun. And I think we all want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Oh, have a good one, everybody.
Merry happy.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell podcast.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.